finally, a psychotherapist that focuses on helping people strive for self-awareness and thrive for self-satisfaction with their place in the world. It's a show for real people with real lives, with all the drama, trauma, and chaos that life can throw at you. Here she is, Dr. Bev.
Welcome to the Dr. Bev Emotions Are Us on America Outbound. Folks, I gotta tell you, I am just pumped up today, okay? I have something that has come to me that it just, I didn't realize it before. And that was, you know, we've been talking about mental illness all this time, but what if you're the mother of a mental ill child who's in fourth grade and she has, let's say, OCD. Let's say she has an anxiety disorder. You know that, but what do you do about it? Well, I'm going to tell you what you're going to do about it. Yes, just bear with me for a while, you know, because I know I can go off. I'm a child's advocate, and that's just who I am. That's Dr. Bev being real and raw. But just bear with me as I travel along with this to just tell you this. Let me put the punchline right here in case you don't make it to the end of, you know, this radio show, which I can't believe that you wouldn't, not on America Out Loud, but let's go with it anyway, okay? Holla. What I'm wanting to say here is to let me put the punchline here, and that is speak, S-P-E-A-K, speak up, speak your truth. If you are suffering, if your child is suffering with mental illness, speak, not just out of need and selfishness, but also out of a gift to those who love you, who share your world, and as an offering to others, mothers, fathers who suffer like you. Speak so that they can understand you better. Children can understand you better. The children in your child's classroom can understand you better. So that they understand that some of them might be suffering through the same thing, but they just don't know any better. So that's why you will speak so that they will know. This is for people to learn, to get educated, to get knowledge, to understand. Speak so that they can understand you better, so that they can know that they are not alone. It's up to us to break the cycle. I have a guest with me today. Her name is Rita. She has been working with children and families for over 25 years. Rita, I know I'm going off. I'm hyped up about this subject because I am a child's advocate, and I do worry about our mental health children who are being bullied, our autistic children who are being classified as, you know, non-teachable because the teachers don't even know how to treat them. They don't even understand what, let's say, autism or OCD or what that is like. They have a teaching degree. They do not have a licensed mental health degree, a licensed social work degree. So they don't understand and how to perceive what is going on with these children. Instead, what I hear in my practice, I know I'm going off again, but yeah, it's Dr. Bev. I'm real, I'm raw, and I'm authentic. And this is it. They go off on the teachers. They blame this, they blame that, but they never really look at their children and what they're doing, only because, people listen to me, it's because the parents don't know. And when you don't know what you don't know until you know. Help me out here, Rita.
Absolutely. Dr. Bev, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to help and be able to speak out and let people know that there is help out there. They're not alone. And, you know, I think that's one of the biggest things in our society is people are just held up in their houses, and they don't even know that other people are suffering too. and they think that they're the only ones. There's lots of people out there suffering, and if we don't speak out and we don't talk to each other and we're not honest with each other, how are we supposed to get the help that we need? You know, every one of us is suffering. That's just part of the human condition. But when you suffer together, your suffering is so much less. And so, you know, people that have mentally ill children, they really, really struggle. And they need the community to come alongside them. They need the community to be there for them. So I think one of the things we need to do is take that stigma away.
Yes.
You know, I don't even know that I really like the word mentally ill. I mean, certainly we have to use words to define things, but it's not an illness so much as they're unique. You know, they have their unique way of doing things. And if you really look back through our history, the people that were the great composers and the great writers, they were technically mentally ill. So Leonardo da Vinci, who else am I thinking of? The guy that cut off his
Einstein,
ear.
Let's talk about Einstein.
Absolutely.
Who had Asperger's. Let's talk about Bill Gates, who has Asperger's. I mean, you brought it up to the top that it is such a stigma and something that we don't want to talk about. And in our children, and I met one child, he's 15 years old. He's in the Asian community. And this child clearly, when he first walked to my office, I looked at him and I said, this child has Asperger's.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what his father thinks? His father thinks he's dumb, stupid, and lazy. His mother thinks he's just not that bright as his other two siblings who are on to college and, you know, making awards in junior high. She just thinks that she has to baby him. And when he walked into my office, it just brought me to tears when I had to give the mother the real diagnosis. There is nothing wrong with your child. I agree with you. I don't like that word mental illness or disability. I'm like, you know what? Your child is an angel.
Yes.
Who has, what did I call it? A specialty. They're special.
Yes.
They are uniquely special. It's not a disability, because this young man, when he came into my office and we got to working together, you know what? I found that his analytical mind was, and I always say, you know, I got a high IQ, you know, okay? Look, I know real when I recognize real. This kid, I had him on a game of putting puzzles together where the puzzle pieces would click, but you were timed by everybody, even adults all over the world. This young man, 15 years old, who was barely talking, staying in his room, playing games, would get act out when he heard loud noises, scared the mother to death. The father absolutely dislikes this child. What I found out, he was a mathematician.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
When I taught him my train your brain program, and he said to me of one of the puzzles that was shaped in polygons, because I like to mix academics with learning, with emotional health. You know, being emotionally healthy, he was using polygons, which is math, to put this puzzle together. And I taught him in less than 15, 20 minutes, train your brain how to sit up. And you know what he said to me the first time that he went through this with a bird polygon pattern? He said he didn't beat the average score. Because I have everything scored so that I can, you know, I can test it out. I can do research on it. So
yes.
he says to me, I want to solve again. He's an Asian. He says, I want to solve again.
Yes.
I said, good, 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 good. I said, so let's see what you do this time. I want you to look with your eyes, but I want you to see with your brain. That's where your power is. So that's where my train the brain program comes from. He did it the second time. He got closer to the average. When I bought his, he did it the third time. The third time in less than 20 minutes, he tried the same puzzle. He put it together, and guess what? He beat the average time of adult human beings all over this world. And you want to tell me this boy has a disability? No, he has a capability that's different from yours.
Exactly, exactly. Yes. And that's the thing, is that when someone is unique, you know, rather than the society, us as a society, looking for how is that uniqueness can serve them even better and then serve the society, we just don't even know how to deal with it. So, and another thing I wanted to mention, when you were talking about the teachers, that they're not trained, well, that's a problem much bigger, you know, than we're going to solve today, but the teachers are just tapped out. They're exhausted. So they're not even able to really recognize that because they're just trying to get through the day. So I don't know that I want to, you know, ever blame our teachers for just doing the very best that they can. But again, it's more of a societal thing that we need to individually begin to realize that when people are different, then they're usually gifted in some way, and mm-hmm. we need to find out what is that gift.
Mm-hmm. And I hear you when you say, let, you know, thank you for cooling Dr. Bev down. Okay, I appreciate that, Rita. You know, let me not blame, but let's put it in a more fabulously sublime way.
Yes.
The teachers need more training. And
yes.
If the teachers had training, then they wouldn't get so burned out. They would recognize this. And like you said, that's a topic I've got to have you on again just to talk about that. So, but we're going to move from there to back to the parents, because that's where I want to focus my attention on today. What the parents go through when their children are young, you know, they go to school or they go to church or different programs, and the parents don't know how to explain, or they're ashamed to talk about the issues that they're having with their children. So if they know, but nobody else knows, they're going to treat your child differently.
Yes. And, you know, this thing with the shame, I always say that you cannot give away something you don't have,
mm-hmm.
and you only give away what you do have. So let's say that you have a bag of apples. All that you can give away are the apples that you have. If you have a bag of rocks, you're going to give a bag of rocks. So if a parent has not worked on their own issues and their own emotional health, they're not going to be able to project that onto their child. So if they're dealing with their own shame, now they're going to be ashamed of their child.
Yes.
So I really think it does come to down to the parents doing their own emotional work and getting themselves so they have apples inside rather than rocks.
But you know what? I wish that we could start teaching children in middle school, high school, you know, before they start having sex with other human beings other than themselves, that we teach them that what you eat goes into your baby, into that fetus. What
yeah.
you think and what you feel and your emotional difficulties, your unsolved childhood traumas, that goes down into that child, into that fetus. So before you get pregnant, how about you get some MH? You know what I call that? Mental health. You can call it EH if you want to, emotional health. I don't care what you call it, as long as, like you say, they get what they need to solve their issues before they start bringing more of themselves into this planet.
That makes me think of when I was pregnant. I was 30 years old. I had been through a lot of therapy myself. So I was very prepared to have a child. And it was the easiest. I mean, raising her was such an easy experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think 30 is a little long to wait. But, you know, the older you are and the more the work that you've done on yourself, the healthier you'll be. And it was just so easy to parent because I didn't have all my own trauma drama going on. So I do think there's a lot to be said for that. People, they should, you know, wait and work on themselves, become healthy. You know, that was the other thing. Being older, I didn't smoke cigarettes. I used to when I was young, but here I was pregnant, not smoking, not drinking alcohol, and able to eat a healthy diet. So, mm-hmm. And stay out of noisy places. I even took it to the extreme. I wouldn't go any place that was really noisy or crazy. No, not saying everyone needs to do that, but...
Well, I'm going to say it for you. This is America Out Loud, Emotions Are Us. I'll go ahead and put it out there for you. Yes, when you're pregnant, you need to keep yourself out of drama, trauma, and chaos. What? Holla at Dr. Bev, okay? You need to keep yourself out of drama, trauma, and chaos, because if you feed yourself and allow yourself to be in that kind of environment, guess what your child is going to be born with emotionally? What?
Absolutely.
Drama, trauma, and chaos. What does that equal to? Stress. We can put it in, you know, psychological terms. Yeah, your child is going to have a lot of anxiety, a lot of anger. It's going to be born there. I mean, that's where it starts. And you're right. I've got to give this to you. You're right. It starts mm-hmm. with the parent and the parent healthiness. And 30 years old, no, I don't think that's too old. I think that's right about right. Because it's right about then that people start working on themselves to be better persons, to be better people. You know, and as you said, you did what most people do, and I don't think you took it to the extreme. In fact, I don't believe you took it to the extreme. I know you took it to the right, which is what? Get a lot of therapy on yourself, work on your issues, your childhood issues, traumas, whatever you may have had, to work on those first before you bring another life through your body out into this world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes it easier on everybody, that's for sure.
And especially easy on the child.
Yes, exactly. You know, I think every kid at some point in their life, they're angry with their parents and they say, I hate you, or something similar to that. Well, if you've worked on your own issues, that's not going to bother you. You don't need to react to it. So if my daughter would get upset, say things like that, I didn't yell, I didn't get upset, because it didn't trigger anything in me. I knew she was just venting her feelings, and I don't need to react to it. So that's one of the things that I think is huge. When you've done your own emotional work, you don't react to things that don't need to be reacted to. You don't need to create drama. You don't need to create trauma. You're just more at peace, and things are okay.
I truly believe in that because, as you said, you know, I have children, I have a child, I have grandchildren, and, you know, every parent has experienced that, whether they have a child who has a mental or emotional capability that others don't have, and they're different and they're unique, or they just have, you know, a healthy, you know, adult, you know, teenager or adolescents, you're going to hear it at least one time as a parent. I hate you. So-and-so mother lets them do this, but they don't let, you don't let me do this. We're going to hear that. But guess what? When we're emotionally healthy, we don't take it personal.
Exactly.
We don't take it personal. It's like, yeah, it's okay. You can hate me for the moment if you want to. But guess what? I'm loving you unconditionally. But let's get back to that child that has a mental or emotional uniqueness and can communicate to the parent their emotional feelings and what they're going through. They can't, you know, they have to act it out in other ways. I want to help that parent, and I want to help that parent help another parent. I was reading a story where this young woman had a fourth grade daughter who had OCD, anxiety, and she had she was on the high end of the Asperger's scale. And she, in her own way, you know, was asking her mother for help, but not appropriately, because of course she didn't know. But once the mother caught on and started to talk to the daughter in the ways that she could communicate, what she found out from the daughter, it was so much truth to me. And the daughter told her, come to my class, talk to them. Everyone knows me of the bad things that I do. And that hurt me when she said the bad things that I do, the different things that I do, the ways that I'm not like them. They know that, but they don't know of the goodness in me. It brought tears to my eyes to read that.
So that was great that the mother was able to pick up on that, and then she was able to help her daughter rather than keep it a secret. And, you know, once again, we're back to, you know, what we were talking about before, that people need to speak up. People need to let others know what's going on with them, what's going on with them, what's going on with their child. They need to advocate for their child. And whether that's going into the schools or church or wherever that child interacts, they need to let people know what's going on with their child rather than keeping it a secret.
And you know what I've found, that in more cases than not, until, you know, something happens, but I wish and my prayer is for all those parents who see their kids at 3 to 4 years old not socially interacting, not sort of like behaving like their other children, that they seek out some professional help. In the story I was reading, the mother was saying that she really realized that it wasn't her daughter's issue. You know, her daughter was quite intelligent, and she knew when people were bullying her or, you know, saying, you know, negative things about her and how it made her feel. But the mother, you know, at the time wanted to hide their family's dirty little, you know, crazy secrets. You know, we can always tell each other about, you know, oh, my kid has cancer, or they broke a bone, or they have diabetes, or they have heart disease. But, you know, we don't want to talk about brain problems. We don't want to talk about emotional problems. We don't want to talk about mental problems. We don't want to talk about any of those issues. It makes me crazy.
Yes.
That's why I have this program, so that I won't become crazy, because I want to get this information out. Help me, Rita.
Yeah. Okay. Just like you said, when we have a broken bone or something's wrong with our stomach, we go to the doctor, we take our children to the doctor, and the doctor looks at the organ that they're treating. Okay? Now, the brain is another organ. Okay? So we need to begin to look at it like that. And if it's not functioning at its optimal level, then let's go figure out how we can get it there. Now, there's a psychiatrist in Newport Beach, California, called Dr. Amen, A-M-E-N, mm-hmm. like the end of a prayer. And he takes brain scans. Now, I'm sure there's some other doctors doing this now also, but it's expensive, so not that many of them do it. But basically, he will take a scan of the brain, and he can see the, the Asperger's or the bipolar, the depression. He can see that the brain is firing differently.
Yes.
And so it's a physical thing that you can actually see. So, again, I love his work because it shows us physically, okay, this person's brain is a little different than the next person's. Let's not say that there's something wrong. Let's say that it's not healthy, and let's get it working at its optimal level. Because we know a lot of that stuff can be helped now. So begin to look at it that way. It's a physical thing, just like a broken arm or a stomach that hurts. And then let's see what we can do to get it better.
And you know, as the story goes on and the mother grows and she begins to take care of her own mental health, then she believes her daughter when her daughter doesn't even hesitate about her going to her class and taking the dirty little secret out of the closet and share it, because to the little girl, hey, it's not a secret. The little girl, her daughter told her, oh yeah, Ma, that would be great. All my class knows about all my inappropriate behaviors because they see them all the time. Boy,
right.
I thought that was such a good point.
Yes. And so, again, educating them that this isn't something that she can necessarily control. It's part of the way that her brain is firing. And there it takes away the judgment of her that it's inappropriate, it's wrong. It's, you know what, her brain is not firing at optimal level right now, so that's why she's going to do those particular things.
Exactly. And it's not about, you know, a negative behavior. This, you know, when a child is depressed or has anxiety or OCD, yes, people, your children can have that. They can have that. We'll talk about adulthood later. But right now, I want to talk about the children. Your children can experience those things. It's
Absolutely.
Not just for adults.
Right. It can happen at any age. Absolutely. I have a relative that I'm very, very sure has probably some ADHD or something like that. She's too young to know. But when I saw her at birth, I knew that this child has something.
mm-hmm.
It just took time for it to show up. So, yeah, it's not anything that the parent did. It's just that's the wiring. That's the way that child is wired.
That's the way that child is wired. And with 25 years of experience as a therapist, you get it.
Yeah.
You get it. That is how they're wired. And that's what's going on. And the earlier that they can have the parent and themselves can have an introduction to professional services that will just help this child tremendously and reduce the drama, trauma, and chaos in their lives, the better off they will be as adults.
Absolutely. And, you know, especially some of these, like the ADHD, children that have that, or even the OCD, they thrive when they have structure. So if you find out that about your child, then you can begin to put some structure in their life because they're going to thrive. And you know what I was just thinking, Dr. Bev? We've been throwing all these terms around that you and I know, but I don't know that other people understand OCD. You know, that means
Okay. Obsessive.
You know, perhaps we need to maybe let them know what the terminology
is. Well, let's do that. OCD. obsessive compulsive disorder. Your child, simply put, does the same thing in the same way most of the time. And when that structure, that order doesn't happen, it throws them completely out of whack and they're going to act out.
Exactly. Well, that, you know, where that wouldn't bother a normal or a child that doesn't have that. But for a child with obsessive compulsive disorder, that's very disturbing to have their normal routine out of whack.
Yeah, they need that structure. Well, we've been talking about anxiety and depression.
Yes.
Explain
mm-hmm.
to me what that would look like in some of the children that you've treated over the years.
Well, depression, I think a lot of us know what depression looks like, especially it seems in today's society. Unmotivated, you know, a lot of times children are depressed and somebody will label them lazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're not lazy. They're depressed, and it's a chemical thing that's happening within their brains, within their body. So they're not really motivated to go to school or to do new things. Perhaps they don't have much of an appetite. That's what's coming to mind right now.
And you know what comes to me, and especially what I found in the minority community, and July starts, which is a little humorous to me, but I'll leave that for another day. But July starts the National Minority Mental Health Month.
Oh,
so
okay.
Yeah, you know, so we get a month to talk about this. I'm just kidding. But anyway, July starts that. And so when we talk about a kid who has anger issues, when I worked in community mental health, the way that those kids from underprivileged, you know, from parents who weren't as educated to know to go seek professional help because they just didn't know. Like you said, you know, they would say, you know, if they had depression, they say the kid is lazy. You know, if they have ADHD, they'll say the kid is bad.
Mm-hmm.
When they have anxiety, explain to me here's what I wanted to say about depression. When I saw it in the community, most of the lower economic children that I came into contact with, they didn't show that depression as laying in the bed and crying and just wanting to be alone. You know how they showed it? With anger.
Yeah.
Anger. Anger. So they were labeled as bad, troublesome in school, you know, inappropriate behaviors. But they were really depressed.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. You know, which also that anxiety, you know, when you look at the brain scans, the anxiety and depression areas of the brain are very close together. And they both can come out as anger because yes. It's just how else are you going to deal with that? They're both very extreme emotions.
And they are. And when children show them to their parents or to their classmates, as I read in this story right here, the little girl, she's in fourth grade, and she says, you know, well, yeah, the kids know all my inappropriate behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they know me as. That's what they bully me by. But they don't really know me, and I don't really know how to explain it, and I need some help.
Yeah. Absolutely. That anxiety, the little girl that you're talking about was dealing with the anxiety, which is actually a physical thing going on in the body. You know, if you think about when, as an adult, maybe you are driving and somebody pulls out in front of you and you feel that surge of like, that's mm-hmm. what anxiety feels like in the body, except that it's constant. It's just this chemical fight, flight, freeze response that's going on in the body. So it's almost electrifying. And to have to feel as if you have these jolts of electricity in your body all the time, it makes you want to move your body. which is and why they say they have bad, why they label them bad, because they're moving, they're doing things to discharge that energy rather than sitting there nicely, you know, which kids aren't meant to just sit there nicely anyway. That's another. So
I get you on that when I'm just, laughter is going on in my mind because we could probably make 3 or 4 shows out of this because you're right. You know, society has it, especially in our school system, in our educational system. You know, the kids should, you know, all of the children should follow in order, be in line, behave like each other, you know, according to the chart. And many of our children don't fit in that for many reasons.
I believe it's Norway. I was reading an article that says that they don't have any homework in middle or in elementary school in Norway. None. Because they want the kids to play a lot. Because they learn by playing. And they actually have very high test scores later because they are learning while they're moving their bodies when they're young. See, we've got it all messed up here. We want them to go sit in school. We've taken away recess. We want them to sit still. Children are not meant to do that. They're not wired to sit still all day.
You bring up an excellent point. I remember growing up, and going in school, we always had, you know, 30, 45 minutes worth of recess where we could run off energy, play, scream, you know, swing on the swings and that kind of thing. I remember when I was teaching an ESE class, we got, I think it was like 20 minutes. And I'm like, you just get the kids hyped up and then you want them to come back into the class and just sit. I'm like, that doesn't make sense to me because I'm a big kid myself. I want to play a little bit more too. I want to run around. I want to burn off this energy so that I can go back in and then sit down and be able to concentrate so my brain would be focused. I'm like, what? But there again, you know, putting the onus on the school. I want to remove it from that. School, I bless you. I bless education. I want us to grow. I want teachers and principals and, you know, the academic world to understand what we as mental health professionals understand. And they get it. And they teach the children according to their level of proficiency.
Yeah, I don't know why we would change the whole, you know, give them back their recess, certainly, make them longer. I think that needs to come from way high up. But, yeah, that's...
And it's interesting what you said about Norway, how high their test scores are, because they treat the children like children and not like little robots.
Yes. In fact, I think it's maybe Montessori schools where they let them learn by playing, and they have found that those children do really, really well. So I don't know what's wrong with our public school system that they're not doing it, but...
Well, you know, I was one of those parents who... I wasn't a therapist back when my son was, young. But Montessori really appealed to me because of my son's personality. Okay. Mm-hmm. It really appealed to me that, you know, he was interested in what he was interested in. And then the other things he could put, a small amount of attention to it. And if he was mixed in with other kids who had a greater amount, then he would become competitive and he would be more in tuned, more in the flow of going with the structure that the teacher had set up for them. But they also had a lot of freedom.
Yes.
Well, I want to take a break right now, and we're going to move this from the fetus. We talked about that. We've talked about childhood, but I really want to talk to people about what happens when this is not taken care of in the fetus stage, when we don't do any knowledge or education in the academic stage. I want to move us to come back and talk about what happens to these kids in the adulthood.
Okay.
We're going to be right back. This is Emotions Are Us with your host, Dr. Bev, and my guest, Rita. Thank you so much, Rita. Let's hold on for a second. And audience, I want you to take a breath, breathe, and take in this information and think about your friends, your family, your neighbors. Think about them in connection with this conversation. We'll be right back to talk about the adult. Welcome back to Emotions Are Us with your host, Dr. Bev, and my guest, Rita, who is a licensed mental health counselor and certified addictions professional. Please go to our front page on America Out Loud. You know, post to us, leave a comment about this conversation. We want to hear from you. You know, put in your name, subscribe to our newsletter, subscribe, share this with your friends and your family, put it on your Facebook page, put it on your Twitter page, or whatever social media you're on, because that's what the world is about, social media. But then again, how about let's just talk to each other? I want to welcome Rita back. And Rita, let's talk about what happens when these children that we've been talking about become adults. What happens in their lives? What happens to these kids?
Well, we can't predict what happens to all of them, but we certainly know they struggle if they haven't gotten the help that they need. And, you know, I jails, institutions, you know, I even hate to say that, but if they don't get the help that they need and they feel as if society doesn't care about them, then, you know, certainly the worst can happen. And best case scenario, you know, is that they grow up, have children of their own, and because their own mental health wasn't taken care of and they weren't taken care of, they begin to continue that the negative behavior towards their own children. And, you know, they're not as good of employees or workers, parents. You know, they could be better than they are.
You are so right. And please, this is Dr. Bev, Emotions Are Us. You don't have to hate anything. You don't have to hate saying that, because you know what? What you're saying is the truth. These children, when they are not taken care of in their younger years, they grow up as adults. And guess where we find them? I know where I find mine. Drug court sends them to me. Alcohol treatment centers send them to me. You know, yeah. The group homes are calling and saying, okay, you know, we don't have enough therapists. We need this. Can you help us with that? You know, when I worked in the prisons, oh, that's when it really broke my heart, where I could see it the most. I worked in an all-male maximum security prison. My goodness. Rita, help me out, because I'm about to cry right now. I'm feeling a little sensitive.
Well, you know, on a positive note, or just to give some hope, if there is someone out there that is an adult now that grew up with that, not getting the help that they needed, we have techniques now. I just love our profession. You know, science has come a long way, and we have techniques that can really change the way that a person feels and therefore the way that they behave. You know, within 1 to 3 sessions, we see huge differences in how someone behaves. So there is help. You know, even if you've grown up like that and let's say somebody that's gotten into drugs and alcohol. You know, there are plenty of people that now today that I know that I've worked with that are sober and have great lives. So, you know, there's that side too, that once you do grow up and you have charge of your own life, take charge of it, because it's never too late to change.
You just said a mouthful. Take charge of your life. Live in the present moment. You can change. There is hope. We've seen it. We know that it happens. And now I hear you say there are new techniques. So let's break that down for our audience, okay? What new techniques are you talking about?
Some of the ones that I use, one of them is called rapid resolution therapy. And it's, you know, it's technical because, you know, to go into all the different components of that, not being, you know, our people aren't therapists out there, the general population. But let me just say that with rapid resolution therapy, there's another one called accelerated resolution therapy, another one called EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing, and also the BOD, which is a bioacoustical utilization device. That is a sound unit. But these four techniques that I have found are fantastic. Just let me try to think of it. Okay
let's break that down a little bit. Give us some example. Let's break this down to, you know, I'm a three-year-old and I don't really understand those big terms that you use. So break that down. I'm a mother. I've got I'm like you said, you know, if you just break it down for me.
All right. Well, the techniques can be used with kids also, but since we're talking about the adults now, let's say there's an adult that has really struggled a lot of their life with, let's say they had obsessive compulsive disorder or ADHD. They had that and they were bullied and they didn't get the attention that they needed. And so they grew up with really low self-esteem. They grew up very angry. They ended up getting into drugs and alcohol, and maybe they even did some prison time. Okay, so they get out of prison, and they've decided that, you know what, I'm an adult now. I'm in charge of my life. It's time to change. So they find themselves a good therapist, and they're able to stop the drugs, stop the alcohol. Done with that. Well, if they use these special techniques, let's suppose that when they got bullied, when they were 10 years old, they were beat up really bad at school. That trauma has been affecting them, even though they don't realize it. It's been affecting them at a cellular level in their subconscious, and that's in a good chance, that's reason why they got so angry and then ended up doing the drugs and ended up in jail.
Holla, Rita, you are off the chain. You are speaking some truth here. Give them some education. Give them some knowledge. What? And so now let's say that this individual comes to you. Which one of these treatments, I want to break these new treatments that we have and that we're using in therapy. Let's break it down. Let's say a trauma. They've had drama, trauma, and chaos all their lives, and they've gotten into drugs and alcohol and whatever. And yeah. You use EMDR on them. Tell me, what is that like? What's the experience like for them? And you say, you know, in three or four sessions, they can really be, there's such an improvement. Okay, so I'm a regular individual. I'm not a therapist. You know, I don't know anything. And I'm looking at you and saying, you mean my brother could be okay? He could be better? He could stop using alcohol just because he has three, four, five treatments with you? Man, get out of here.
Yeah. Now, you know, drugs and alcohol, if someone is an addict, or an alcoholic, no. The three treatments are not going to take that away.
Thank you.
That is a more ongoing thing, you know, which is like the program of Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous. People go to those programs. That's an ongoing, make sure that they don't pick up another drink. Because once they do, it is a physical thing within their body that they're going to want to drink more. But if they were using the alcohol to cover some trauma, and they're not so much addicted to it as it was used as a mechanism to cover the trauma that happened in their life, then yes, these techniques, clearing the way the mind's been looking at that trauma and the way the body's been responding to that trauma, now there's no need to medicate.
And now what is that treatment called again?
Well, all of these techniques that I'm mentioning, and they're on my website, EMDR is the one that's been around for the longest. It's called EMDR for short, but the full word is eye movement desensitization reprocessing.
Okay, now let's stop right there and let's break that down for people. What is eye movement desensitization process? Tell me what that is.
Well, what we know now is that when a person has a thought, it then creates a chemical reaction in the mind and then also in the body. So that becomes an emotion. So if you think about something that happened to you that was very unpleasant, chances are you're going to also feel it in your body. Well, you did this earlier. When you thought about reading the article, you began to get sad. Or you thought about working with the men in the prison, you began to get sad. So it started with a thought and then created the emotion. So we use the eye movements, which is basically I move my hand back and forth in front of their eyes. And as we're doing the eye movements, they're also thinking about whatever the trauma was. And that is desensitizing, right? The mind and body to that thought, to that trauma. And therefore, it's now a whole chemical process that happened in the mind and the body, so that no longer bothers you. If it no longer bothers you, then there's no need to self-medicate.
Ah, exactly. People, did you hear what Rita Young just said? If that happens, then it's no longer a need to self-medicate. Now, you mentioned a couple of other terms, and we've got a few more minutes. I want you to explain and give an example of the other terminology that you use in your practice.
Okay. One of the other techniques is called rapid resolution therapy, and it's a process of talking about the trauma, but doing it in such a way that I, as the sort of the director of the show, do not allow their mind to go into the emotion of it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that you came to see me and you were disturbed because you kept thinking about when you worked in the prison system. Then I would go through this process in talking to you and in having you do some calming techniques, and then also having you talk to me about what happened at the prison, but doing it in a way that you stay completely present with me. In fact, I act very silly in my sessions. I may be joking with you or laughing, because that's disrupting the mind so that the mind doesn't have to feel the misery of the trauma.
Go for it. I just love this. Speak your truth and teach people. This is what Emotions Are Us on America Out Loud is. This is America Out Loud. Go for it.
So then once you have that calm feeling, it's what's called memory reconsolidation. Your mind now can think about the trauma. Let's say, again, going back to the prison, when it can think about working in the prison, but there's no emotion attached to that. Therefore, no trauma. Therefore, no need to be upset or to self-medicate or anything like that.
Hallelujah.
And I've seen this work over and over and over in my practice. So it's just a wonderful thing to be a part of and a wonderful thing to watch somebody transform in such a quick period of time.
You know, I believe that this is a wonderful way to end this radio program on such a wonderful, powerful note, that there is help, there is a system, there is a way out. Be your own person, stay in your body, be aware of how you do what you do and how you do it. Learn to speak your truth. Learn to take responsibility. And that when I say take responsibility, take your ability to respond to what's happening to you on the in your internal world as well as your external world. And then lastly, these are my Gestalt principles, by the way. And lastly, you let go of the outcomes because you know you have been authentic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that you said your ability to respond. And that's where the counselors come in, is if you don't have the ability to respond the way that you'd like to, that's what we're all about, is helping people to have the ability to respond.
Yeah, the ability to us to respond in an appropriate manner for them.
Absolutely. Yes.
Rita, it has been fabulous having you on the show. I want to let my audience know that you can go to the show page and you can see all the information about Rita and how you can get in contact with her. She's the owner of Dragonfly Counseling. Yes, and so all of that will be on the show page. You'll be able to click on it and reach her and talk to her. And then also know that there are many of us out there. You can call Dr. Bev. You can reach me through the webpage. If you want to have a session through Skype or through the telephone, or if you're in the city where I live, or even if you want me to travel to where you are, I am open to that because I want our profession to grow, to be something that is really respected, to not be a secret, for people not to be ashamed. Rita, thank you so much for helping me make this happen.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
This is Dr. Bev. Emotions Are Us on America Out Loud. And remember, people, do this for me. Help me out. Help me spread the word. Help Rita and I spread the word. Twitter, Facebook, any social media, talking to your neighbors, going to the schools and talking to your children's classroom, to their principals. If they're an adult, letting them know that there are other ways to help them. I thank you all for listening. We're going to be right back next week with another What? It's America Out Loud with Emotions Are Us, your host, Dr. Ben. Holla back.